From Assassin's Creed to Tales of Kanzera, and from acting in games to making them, we have a very special guest in today's episode of the PlayStation Access Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the PlayStation Access Podcast, the official podcast of PlayStation UK. I am your host, Rob Pearson, and we have two guests today. We have a normal guest who hasn't been nominated for any BAFTAs.
Oh, I'm not normal.
That's
sorry,
David
that's
Jackson.
Not me. I thought I was normal. Sorry.
No, no. I'm the normal one.
David's the normal non-BAFTA nominee.
Still waiting on my BAFTA nom.
And we have a very special guest who is a BAFTA-nominated actor. It's Abubakar Salim.
Hello.
Hi. What an amazing pleasure to have you on the podcast,
Thank
Abu.
You for having me. This is great.
You've set me a challenge now, Rob.
Yeah.
This time next year, I will be a BAFTA-nominated
I didn't want this animosity to start,
more,
guys.
There's more to go in this introduction for Abubakar here.
Please.
Okay. So, BAFTA-nominated actor who's appeared in the likes of Sky One's Jamestown alongside former podcast guest Ben Starr.
Oh, what a man.
He's been in HBO series Raised by Wolves, and you will soon be seeing him in House of the Dragon Season 2, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's exciting.
Our audience may know Abubakar best as the voice of Bayek from Assassin's Creed Origins.
What a game.
But also, since then, you have founded Surgent Studios, whose debut game, Tales of Kanzera Zao, is coming out on PS5 on the 23rd of April.
Yeah.
Am I getting that correct?
Yeah.
Also, it's going to be on the game catalogue for PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium members.
Yeah, oh, that's
and
great
when
news.
It comes out, which is great. So, you've been a busy man.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's been... It's so funny. I have this feeling of, like, as soon as we announce the game at the Game Awards, it's just been one long, continuous day. I've just felt like everything has just kept going and kept happening, and it's been great and it's been wonderful. And yeah, but it's been, you know, I'm running around because, yeah, House of the Dragon is literally coming out in a month's time or so. So I'm having to prep for that and everything. And also the game's coming out in a week, which is kind of very surreal. So it's just been very, very busy.
What was that Game Awards moment like? Because there's in any kind of, like, I suppose whenever you're making something creative, there's like the time when it exists, but no one knows about it, and it's like a safe time, you know, like things can change, you can whatever. And then as soon as that watershed moment of like, right, well, now we've told everybody it's coming, it's definitely coming, it's called this, it looks like this, this is what you do. What was that like, that night like?
Surreal. So, you know, leading up to it, right, we've been building this game now for 4 years, you know, building the studio essentially for 4 years. And leading up to it, we were like, oh man, we can't wait to announce it. This is going to, you know, we just want to get it out there so we can actually talk about it. And then as soon as we announced, and, you know, me going on stage and basically, it's so funny, I have this joke with my partner basically saying, yeah, everyone's just going to remember me as the guy who cried on stage, not because of the House of the Dragon or, you know, Jamestown or Bayek. They're going to be like, oh, it's that guy who cried on the Game Awards stage.
We should redo your intro.
I know, we really should. That's special guest who cried on the game. It was surreal because, you know, ended up announcing, it was received, you know, lovingly. I could feel the pressure of, you know, as soon as I got emotional, everyone was like, I really hope this game is good. So when it came out, everyone, you know, the trailer, everyone was really, really nice about it and love about it. And then afterwards, there was this feeling of like elation for like maybe 15, 20 seconds. And then afterwards it was like, oh my God, I hope this game is going to be really good. And I hope people like it. And that's been my fear since the announcement to now. I'm like, oh God, I really hope it works. Oh God, I really hope it works. Oh God, it's like building up the hype for something and you're like, oh, but is it good? Are they going to like me? So yeah.
Well, I can confirm, Abu, that it is good. I've been playing it a lot at home. I think
me
Dave's
too.
Been playing
I've
it
been
as well.
Playing.
Oh, amazing.
It's real fun. We're going to talk a little bit more about Tales of Kanzera Zao later on in the podcast. But for the intro section, Abu, I just wanted to ask you some questions about your own personal journey with video games and your career so far.
Sure thing.
So I want to dial it right back to the beginning. Mm. Have you always been a gamer, and what were the games you remember enjoying as a kid?
Oh man, where do I start? Like I've been a gamer for as long as I can remember. You know, from playing like pinball on the PC, solitaire as well on the PC, right?
Oh, yes.
To like, you know, Sonic on the Mega Drive, Golden Axe. Like, oh, what classic. A game.
Yeah.
You know, playing Ocarina of Time on the 64, GoldenEye. I'm a huge Command & Conquer Red Alert fan. Like, yeah. Used to love Red Alert, played Warcraft as well, was massive into World of Warcraft as well. Played that for like a good few years of my life. I'm massive gamer from like the get-go. I'd say like my earliest memory of playing a game generally has to be, it's between Golden Axe and Sonic with my father. So yeah, it was games have definitely been a thing for me since the beginning. Especially because as I was growing up, I didn't really necessarily get on, I didn't really like watching TV and films mm-hmm. much, and reading was a bit hard because I'm dyslexic, so it's, you know, it takes me a while. Like I'm all right now, but like it's still something that I struggle to do and struggle to read, essentially, as a, you know, a good book. So really, games were my only way or medium of sort of enjoying and kind of escaping and relaxing to a degree, which my father saw very early from, you know, when I was young, and rather than necessarily see like, oh, games are bad for you, he was very much like, no, you enjoy this is cool, so just dive into it a bit more.
That is cool. Did he discover games with you? Like, yeah. He wasn't already a gamer himself.
No. He discovered them with me. I think, you know, the games that he was, obviously, like, you know, I feel like our parents were playing like actual live games with people, like, you know,
right.
And actually communicating with people, right? Whereas with games, I think my father was very much of the mentality of, oh, this is tech, so this is really interesting. I'm going to try and dive into it a bit more and see what happens. And he loved it.
Yeah.
He really, really enjoyed it. He could see the magic and the art in it, which was really, really cool. And I think like that was what was really supportive and really loving, was even though he participated a bit here and there, he really actually enjoyed watching me play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Did you feel a desire from a young age then to do something in games as a career when you're old? Did you have anything in your mind then?
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I used to think like you'd put these cassettes in these things and like magic happens. Like, yeah. Gremlins are in the stations, like making it work, and your TV comes alive. Like, I had no idea you could actually have a career in games. And it was one of those ones where I think if I knew that you could, at a young age, I probably would have jumped into the games industry much earlier than being an actor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I was really into, you know, my father had these, C++ for Dummies books. And I remember looking at the covers of these and thinking, this is really cool. And wanting to kind of, you know, learn more about it. And I think his fascination for tech and software and all these kind of, you know, computer languages kind of rubbed off on me. And it was one of those ones where, yeah, I think if I knew you could have a career in games, that'd be great. Because the only career I kind of knew of within the tech space was my father, and he was a software engineer for Xerox, for printers.
Right.
And I don't want to do that. It's like, I'd rather pretend to be people that I'm not. So, you know.
So how did you get your first acting role in video games, I guess, or maybe to go even before that, so like where did your love of acting come from, and then how did you jump from that to realizing, oh, this is a viable option for video games as well as on screen?
So I'd say my love for acting, really, or even just storytelling in general, actually came from games. I think I was so amazed by the power of storytelling that these games could have on you. You know, you're literally jumping into the shoes of these characters and exploring and evolving with them as you go along, and you're going on that journey. And it's like the best way I can describe it, it's this mixture of a book as well as a film, in the sense that, you know, the book element is the active participation of it, right? And the film element is seeing the world as it kind of goes along, and mm-hmm. you are kind of emotionally going on this journey with the character. So that made me really fall in love with storytelling. And, you know, found drama at school, and sort of enjoyed this idea of playing, you know, these different characters. A lot of the time I was either trying to play like Dragon Ball Z characters or like some form of like, you know, really cool sort of, you know, be it like, I don't know, Link or whatever. But that's where it really started. And it was only until sort of, you know, around sort of 16 and 17, I'd say, where I, you know, started being like, oh yeah, there's theaters and all this sort of stuff that I can go to, like these after school things and whatnot. And essentially it just sort of rolled, like, you know, sort of the, everything kind of happened afterwards, mm-hmm. right? You know, it kind of naturally all happened. I remember saying to myself as well, because I, again, grew up in an all right neighborhood. It wasn't the greatest, but it was all right. But there was a moment in time where I remember saying to myself, if I'm not going to be an actor, I'll just join the army. Because I was like, because I generally had no idea what to do. And so luckily enough, you know, got into like, you know, National Youth Theatre at the time, which you had to audition for and all this stuff. And then got into drama school first time around, which was great. And it's kind of, you know, escalated from there really. And now I've been, you know, the first sort of job I remember doing was this weird TV show called 24. If anyone remembers 24 with
Jack Bauer.
Jack Bauer. Oh
my
yeah.
God, wow. You're talking to a fan right here.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Man.
That was like the dawn of modern TV. Oh, as far I think as it was. 24.
So I remember, God, I remember auditioning for this role. It was like for the security guard, like number one or maybe even number two, to be honest. And like,
I want number one.
Literally, give me number one. But it was the one where they was all based in London.
Okay, you know
what
yeah.
I
mean?
Yeah. So yeah. So that was really cool. And I was like 20, 21 at the time. I don't know, I can't remember. Anyway, it was like I had like two lines in it, right? But, you know, young me wanting to prove and be the best at what I can do. I remember watching all of the series of 24.
That's amazing. The research.
Literally every single season, and not realizing, right, that every single episode is 1 hour of the 24 hours yeah. he's got to do to save the world. That's a lot of episodes just for my two lines.
Like 8 days of work.
Oh my God, man. That was pretty epic.
Did you go real method with this guy? He had a backstory.
Well, I mean, like I wrote like a little bit about him, but I'm like, I can't get much out of these two lines, but I'll do my best. But you know, it was that kind of role where it was two lines in an American accent, which at the time, you know, I thought I was pretty good at American accents.
Yeah.
But then when you're doing these two lines over and over, you know, when you lose the sense of what these what words are.
100%.
So that ended up happening. And so when I'm on set and I'm doing this with, you know, with Mr. Sutherland, you know, it wasn't even with him to begin with. What ended up happening is I do it with all the other, you know, the stand-ins first.
Yeah.
And then when Mr. Sutherland was ready, he would come in. And I love how I call him Mr. Sutherland, just because everyone there was calling him Mr. Sutherland rather than Kiefer. Anyway, the point is, it was like, so he comes, so then they're like, oh, Mr. Sutherland's ready. And, you know, the director has set up all these shots, which is great. But then as he walks in, he's like, I don't like any of these shots that you've got. The director's like, oh. I'm there like, I've just got two lines. Yeah. I've just got to do these two lines. Anyway, it takes me like two or three, four takes to do these lines. And I can remember it. He looks at me and he's like, are you new? And I was like, yes, sir. I was like, good job. And that's what got me the role of Bayek in Assassin's Creed Orange. It was literally like, yeah, it was one of those ones where I was like, oh, okay. At least he said I'm okay. So I'll continue.
That's the best news. That's
honestly,
so good.
Honestly, it was such a, that was one of those moments I remember as well where I was like, this is going to set me to either continue being an actor and do this, or I'm just going to turn around and be like, right, time to join the army. it was really, really surreal. Really surreal.
I can't imagine how tough that is. Like, obviously, you know, just being on set anyway, there's lots of people. There's lots of money being spent. You know that, like, everyone's counting on you to do your bit, and you're rehearsing. You've obviously watched every episode of 24 in preparation. And then, like, the icing on the cake is that then seemingly the most important person comes in, who's so important that everyone calls him Mr. Sutherland, even though they know his name's Kiefer. And like, and it's like, you have to do it now. I can't imagine that pressure. I think I'd absolutely crumble.
Especially as a first time job as well. Like, and you know, the thing is, it's like now I'm like used to cameras. Cameras are like, you know, they're just part of the set.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, you've got this big eye in your face and you're like, oh wow, this is really intimidating. So yeah, it was where I started. And you know, where I kind of got into games was, you know, I auditioned for Assassin's Creed Origins, not knowing it was a video game.
Mm-hmm.
like, again, I was still playing a lot of games at the time. I was a massive Assassin's Creed fan. So like it just, and you know, I was just playing everything, but I never really knew how to break into that space.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get a call from my agent being like, oh, you've got an audition for this motion captured TV show. And I remember thinking, yeah, sure, okay. Where is it filmed? That was in Canada. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Go for it. They're like, oh, yes, in an Egyptian accent, ancient Egyptian. And I was like, all right, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean? But, you know, I end up doing it. And they call me back in, like it was a self-tape. They call me back in. And then as I go into the room, Alex Wilton-Regan's there. And I know Alex.
Yeah.
Not as a friend at the time. I just loved her work.
Yeah.
So I'm then trying to like think, why is she here? Because she's like an amazing like video game, you know, actress. She's an amazing actress, but specifically, you know, a lot of really cool video game stuff. And then they tell me in the room that it's for Assassin's Creed. And oh man, I tried so hard to be cool. But I tried so hard. I just ended up nerding out. I was just like, oh my God, wait, you're doing another, oh my God, Assassin's, oh my God, who am I auditioning? The Assassin, oh my God. And like literally telling them the history of like, you know, and then there's the Animus. And then what ends up happening is like, nothing is true, everything is permitted, that kind of thing. And it's like, you know, like quoting this stuff. And they're looking at me like, guys, we just get paid per month. Like we don't. So that was, you know, that's essentially how I ended up getting into video games. Because yeah, did the audition, got the role, and that sort of opened my mind and my eyes to, oh wow, you can actually have a career in it. Like there are people behind the machine, you know. Yeah. And it was really fascinating. It was really, really cool.
I find it really fascinating how, and I've heard this story quite a lot, where people who are acting in video games don't know the exact nature of the role they're acting yeah. for or auditioning for.
Yeah.
Like, Ben Starr yeah. said a similar thing when he was auditioning for Clive in Final Fantasy 16. I've seen a video recently of, I don't know if you've seen this, of Matt Mercer when he went in to record Vincent Valentine in Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. He thought he was just recording for like NPCs in Nibelheim. Yeah. And then they had this whole like video presentation where they revealed to him live, like, actually, you're voicing Vincent.
You will be.
Don't you have to ask him first?
I know, literally.
Would you like to be the voice of Vincent? You just aren't doing it.
No, you just do it. Honestly, it's one of those ones where it's so secretive. And I kind of get it, but I also kind of don't, because there's a part of me that's like, if you had told me it was for Assassin's Creed, I mean, maybe it was good that they didn't tell me it was for Assassin's Creed to begin with, because if they did, I probably would have been like, well, actually, this is how I'm supposed to perform it. Whereas, you know, the fact that they didn't tell me, I kind of just came in as the actor, right? But there is a moment as well where like you get actors who are like, yeah, you tell them this big news and they're like, what?
Like, I don't know what Assassin's Creed is.
For sure.
You know what I mean? So there's that element.
I was thinking like when they told you that, they would have no way of knowing, you know, like I'm sure there are actors out there who have no kind of real knowledge of video games. Mm. And it might have thought that they were auditioning for a TV show and wanted to be in a TV show. Yeah. And then went, oh, I don't mean what is that? So games have actors, do they? How does that work?
I know.
And so like it was probably a massive relief when you were like, I've got to tell you, I love Assassin's Creed.
Oh man, it was the best. I think they also felt really cool about it, because yeah, it was the best. And it was so funny again with having noticed and you know, recognized Alex, to then after getting the role and being like, literally like, Alex, I'm a huge fan. I mean, like we're like the bestest and closest of friends now. You know, I'm godfather to a son, and it's one of those ones where if it wasn't for me, I think just nerding out in that room,
yeah,
it would have been a different story. But yeah, it was great, man. It's been a really, again, like my journey's been really interesting, because I haven't stopped doing, you know, the TV aspect and the film aspect, which I've been really lucky and fortunate for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, still appreciating and respecting the game space and you know, loving the game space. And I think like being able to dabble within all these different spaces is, I just feel like I'm playing everywhere, and I'm like, yeah. and I'm loving it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool. How much did you know about the differences or what it would be like to be an actor for video games as opposed to an actor for screen?
Oh man.
And like, you know, I am naive about this.
Yeah.
Obviously there are like millions of lines of dialogue. and cutscenes, like hours of cutscenes in like Assassin's Creed Origins.
Yeah.
How much time did it take?
Oh man, I think I was filming that for over 2-3 years.
Wow.
Like it was a lot. Yeah. Like it was a lot. And there was a moment as well where I had to finish it before going on to Jamestown, where I remember I was in the booth, in the sort of the VO booth, doing all the other extra additional dialogue. And I remember the page, it was like a, you know, like a Bible. And I remember just thinking, all right, I've got to finish this. So we ended up spending like, I think, oh God, I don't want to exaggerate, but it was like close to like 10 hours in the booth every day, just recording line to line to line to line.
Yeah.
So it was a lot, but I had no idea really about motion capture. I had to learn on the spot. I had to learn a lot because you don't really, I mean, now what's great is like, you've got places like, you know, the drama school Lambda, which I went to, they're now teaching actors how to do motion capture.
Yeah.
So they're teaching that as a, you know, as a curriculum, as an element of as a tool for actors to kind of, you know, take with them. Because they're realizing as well, like this is going to be like the bread and butter for a lot of actors.
Yeah.
Whereas when I entered, I had no idea what a volume was, no idea what these suits were or any of this motion capture element. You just had to get up and play.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difference between, for example, like the first scene that I did on Assassin's Creed, which was, it was when I've kind of just killed Tahaka, the Scarab, and that scene, I was very much doing almost what I thought was like a filmic sort of acting.
Mm.
And I remember watching that afterwards and being like, ah, man, nah, you're not getting a lot from that. You know, it works, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
In comparison to then like the final scenes where, you know, the final scene actually was the opening of Assassin's Creed Origins, where I'm like, you know, where I'm screaming at, you know, the guy and putting a blade through his head. That, you know, the difference of being emotive and being kind of, you know, almost like in the body, it's just so different.
Yeah.
And like, and I had to learn that within the space of filming and doing Assassin's Creed Origins, which was really, really cool. So yeah, it was definitely one of those ones where you had to learn on the job, which is always the case. You always have to learn on the job, really. But that was definitely like, yeah, baptism of fire.
And that's one of the things, it's sort of similar to a question I was going to ask about the difference between acting for a TV show or a film versus acting for a game. I get the impression that acting for a game must be quite a lonely experience sometimes if you're like locked in a VO booth.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, if you're on a TV set, you've got your other fellow actors there right in front of you, you're on a set, you're in costume. Mm-hmm. How challenging is it to sort of really get into the character? Because you must have to do so much work with your imagination when you're being in a video game.
Yeah, a hell of a lot. I mean, like, it's again, like the way I can describe working in the booth is that it is very isolating, but you kind of have to map the story out for yourself in a way, and it's almost like playing music. You have to find the music of the line and the dialogue and what goes on, because really, truly, ultimately, that's what's going to also tell the story. Like, the lines are going to tell the story most of the time. Whereas in the motion capture, like in the volume, you're quite lucky in the fact that you can actually work with other actors. You can work off them and react off them. Of course, you've got these massive cameras and machines and lights in your eyes. So it doesn't, you know, they can serve as distractions. But at the same time, if you kind of imagine yourself being a kid again, you know, and playing as like a kid, that's where the magic really, really happens. You can almost be slightly restricted on a film and TV set because everything looks too real. You know?
Right.
And you kind of, yeah, it helps you kind of get immersed, but you the imagination is kind of stripped from you slightly from that. Whereas in a volume, there's so much room to play. There's so much you can imagine and see. And that's where, you know, a lot of the fun kind of happens. But yeah, it's a funny one because I do find that, you know, I mean, nowadays, especially with when it goes to being in VO, doing VO and, you know, in booths, they try and bring actors in at once, so then you can kind of play off one another, but still we're in a time where I think like it is quite an isolating job where you just have to read your lines over and over again until you get something that sounds like they're trying to have a conversation with one another. But yeah, I think it's evolving over time. I think we're going to get into a time where you are going to literally just pull in actors and just do it almost like a theater play, and then you've got your material, and then you can move on, because there really is something about hearing two actors working with one another and playing with one another that is so different to like having, for example, an actor in one booth doing it on a Tuesday and then another actor doing it on like a Friday, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It's so interesting hearing you just say about, I've never thought about how it could actually be, you know, being in the volume could actually be quite freeing. Like, you know, about like, always think about costumes and sets, like really help you get into character and understand where you are. But also I can see how that is or could be quite restrictive in terms of that's what you've got to work with. Whereas if you're just relying on your imagination, you're in this crazy dark room in a skin tight suit with, you know, and it's just like, well, all I have is imagination.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there is no limit. There's no budget to your imagination. So it's like,
there's like, honestly, I've worked with actors who've done motion capture who've been slightly intimidated by being on in a volume because it almost is too freeing.
Yeah.
You have no idea what is going to anchor you, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, like I love
flotation tank.
Honestly, you know what I mean? Like, it could be anything. And I think that that's what's really cool about it. Like, I feel like that's where you can really kind of play and imagine it. It goes back to almost like playing Dungeons and Dragons and role playing and sort of the freedom of the, like, you know, the space of the mind, the theater of the mind is like so much more powerful than being on set sometimes, you know?
It's so funny you would say that because Rob and I, to kind of celebrate Cyberpunk 2077 coming out, or just before, we, on the channel, we did a little kind of, we played the RPG, the tabletop RPG.
Oh, amazing.
2020. And I remember I had a little bit of experience of D&D. Rob had zero experience and we did like a little, like preliminary session and it was just like, and our DM sort of like, set the scenario, we all knew our characters, whatever, and was like, what do you want to do? And Rob was just so confused. He's like, well, what can I do? He's like, well, what do you want to do?
Anything. Yeah,
like, well, I don't get it. What can I go over there? Like, yeah, if you is that what you want to do? He's like, I don't know. What can I do? It was like they suddenly,
what are the rules?
What are the rules?
It's like, there are sort of no rules. It's like, it's just your imagination.
Yeah,
it's crazy,
man.
Those sort of like safety barriers are kind of really useful.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, and when they're gone, at first it's like, oh man, I can do anything. I can do anything. I can just think it.
Yeah, literally. Honestly, it's. I'm a bit of a chaos player, so I'm the kind of player where, yeah, you'd be like, all right, you're in a bar, and I'm like, and I start a fight.
Yeah, that's right. Find the edges.
Yeah, literally.
Like, God's sake.
Honestly. Yeah. Literally.
Just chucking out pages of carefully laid plans.
Yeah. Honestly.
Abu, I really want to get on to talking about Tales of Canseras now, but I do have a really silly question that I've always wanted to ask video game voice actors about this.
Okay.
Do you have a day where you do like combat and traversal noises?
Oh man.
Where it's just like, do you like do those in a big block? Like, how does that work? And how do you feel when you're doing that?
Oh man, most actors hate it because it's so strenuous on the voice. Like, it's a lot where you're like, like crazy stuff, and it's like weird. But I love it because I've got this thing where I say it now and I'm probably never going to work again, or some voice director is going to listen, they'll be like, ah, there it is. I do this thing where I try and copy the you know, Link falling, I do that in every game that I'm asked to do that in. So I've done that in Tales of Canseras Out. I've done it in Assassin's Creed Origins.
I'm looking out for it now. This is amazing.
Like, literally, like that Link falling, I do it every time, and most of the time I get away with it.
This
is
like
great.
Your Wilhelm scream.
Pretty much.
It's like, yeah, I'm making this a thing.
Yeah, honestly. And it's so funny. There was only one person who caught it out. They were like, is that Link falling? And I was like, no, it's Bayek. It's like great. So it is such a weird day because those noises don't sometimes sound like you're fighting. They are very weird. And, you know, you've also got like the different deaths as well. And those don't sound like you're dying either sometimes. Like, it's one of the most, you kind of look at the technician on the other side and you're like, okay, we're going to go through this. Right. We're going to get closer by the end of this. So let's just do this. And so, yeah, it's very surreal.
I would love to be a witness to like, I can just imagine some of the conversations. Like,
I don't even know how you direct that.
I know.
If you're the director, Like, how, you know, how do you know?
I got pain there, yeah. but I wasn't really getting burning. It needs more of a burning.
Oh, honestly, it's very, very weird. It's very weird.
I love it. But I want to talk about your transition, Abu, from actor into the founder of Surgeon Studios. That's quite it's not a transition that I've heard happening too often. So what inspired that decision? And, you know, how did you make it happen?
It really came from, again, as I said from the beginning, I've always loved storytelling. So the idea of telling stories or being part of a story has always kind of just been in me. So to start a studio where it really kind of focuses on telling good stories or wanting to tell good stories has just been a massive dream of mine, you know, to not only create a space where I can, you know, I can tell my stories, but I can tell other people's really cool stories as well. Like, that's been something that I've always wanted to do. I had, again, no idea how to do it or where to start, but I'm beginning to realize, like, maybe that's my superpower, my ignorance, because I just end up essentially, you know, doing it. But yeah, it was one of those ones where, again, I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to, you know, make films or, you know, do a theater play or make games. It was just that thing of like, okay, cool, I want to do this, but how do I do it? I guess I'll just learn on the way. And yeah, Surgent was really founded. It was always part of the plan, but I think it only really came into fruition truly when Telza Kinzera came into play. And I think, like, you know, even though I've done, you know, I've helped produce films and write a few things here and there, they were almost like testers and teasers mm-hmm. in regards to actually making something that was actually, you know, okay, this is within our studio, this is our identity, and this is something that we really wanted to push. And yeah, it honestly, I think the spark came from when I was doing Raised by Wolves at the time. I was in South Africa and I had this just moment of like, oh wow, I'm working with Ridley Scott. Like, who can say that? You know, like, oh, this is nuts. He said yes to me. So I guess I'm pretty good at this, so I'm gonna try and do it myself. So that's essentially where it came from.
And, like, you know, how's that journey been then, I guess? And sort of where did, you know, you say that the sort of launch pad for it essentially was when Telza Kinzera came about. Mm. Like, what was the inspiration for that game? And, like, is this a story that you've always had inside you specifically that you've wanted to tell? Like, you know, where's the game come from?
Yeah, so it's, again, so after I lost my father 10 years ago, and he was, again, guy who introduced me to games. He was a very, very good storyteller in regards to, you know, just kind of holding the room. He didn't really talk much. Mm. He was just... you're just good at telling stories.
Yeah.
You know, you just wanted to listen to him. And after I lost him, I was, you know, for the first sort of three, four years, I was very much like just walking in this weird zombie state, no idea what was going on, kind of a bit lost. And I think there was this thing that was brewing in me, this feeling of wanting to kind of, this grief, but I had no idea how to really communicate it or talk about it, right? Anyway, cut to, you know, two more years later, I've started to kind of get comfortable with the idea of, okay, my father isn't actually here. I'm doing all this really cool work. Then, you know, I'm in South Africa. And I think there was just something about, I was playing Ori and the Blind Forest on my Switch at the time. And there was a feeling of, I think it was the waterfall section, which, oh my God, was brutal. But I remember completing it and this feeling of elation, which I've felt before, not really felt like at that level with all the previous games that I've played. There was something about that moment where everything just kind of clicked and I was like, oh, wait, hang on. I think I know what I need to do. And it was, you know, I need to make a video game and I need to express my journey of grief in a way that kind of, but communicate it through a game. Yeah. And it was very much that was really where everything just sort of clicked and happened and just made sense. Very surreal moment. It was that whole, like, I can pinpoint the moment of it, but the kind of the everything happening from founding the story of, like, the name of Telza Kinzera to founding the characters to finding, you know, to finding the sort of world that I wanted to jump into. Like, it all stemmed from this feeling of, like, I need to make a game about the journey of grief.
And so, yeah, it was one of those surreal moments of like waking up and becoming the Lisan Al Ghalib kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, but yeah, it was very surreal. It was very almost spiritual in a way.
And how have you found, I guess, you know, you've talked quite emotively there about where this story has come from. And I guess, you know, it's obviously something that means a lot to you personally, this story as well. And then the actual reality of putting this thing together.
Yeah.
Like, what's it been like actually seeing that game go from that thing that you felt inside of you to now you can see it's finished. Like, it's about, you know, we're recording this a week or so before it comes out, but by the time this podcast comes out, like, it's a days away from release. Like, what does that feel like, seeing that thing just blossom and into this finished creation?
It's really surreal, because I remember, like, again, as I say, coming up with this idea of thinking of this really cool game, this platformer, this Metroidvania, this sort of, you know, very much inspired by, like, this action platformer. Oh yeah, I could see it. Oh, set within, you know, within an African setting, because, you know, again, the stories that my father told me very much were like, you know, very Bantu sort of stories that he would share with me. And I was like, yeah, this is a great way of kind of honoring him. And so I remember writing this stuff down and even drawing scribbles of level designs, like basic level designs of how this would work. And I remember just going into, you know, even talking to anyone or showing anyone I can, being like, look, this is what I want to make. How do I do it? And to being, you know, to now, like, cutting to now and seeing it all in front of me, I'm like, this is so surreal. Like, these are all kind of ideas that I had. The character, for example, the hairstyle, the setting, the vibe, the music, even. And it's all coming to fruition. It's a very scary but also beautiful kind of, you know, process to kind of witness.
Yeah,
I think it's that whole thing of this, the power of an idea, or the power of thought, of wanting something to happen. And because I think it was so driven by something so personal, and wanting to share, and kind of, because I think my journey of grief was very, I felt, and I'm sure other people do feel this as well, it was very isolating. I felt very alone when it was happening, and it felt very unique to mine, to my own self. But I feel like it's, even though everyone is going to go through it in some way, shape, or form, be it either through, you know, the loss of a parent or even a pet or even a job, like, I just wanted to almost make something that shared and said, hey guys, you're not actually alone in this. So to actually now see it being out there, and even when I announced it and had people come up to me and be like, oh man, I lost a parent, or I lost a friend recently, and what you said really, you know, really meant something to me. To actually have that almost community blossom through that is very surreal. From like sketches, you know, to your drawings of having no idea how to make a game, to now it being something that connects people, it's a really powerful feeling.
Sure.
It's so true about grief, and there's that almost, it's almost taboo, you know, like, it can be like a weird taboo subject. As you said, everybody goes through a loss at some point, I'm sure, whether it's, you know, like you say, a loved one, a family member, or a job, or whatever it is. And there can be like this weird taboo with your closest friends and family, where they sort of like don't want to bring it up in case it's upsetting or something. And it's like, and then you can just end up kind of sitting with this, you know, with these things, I guess. Is there, you know, like the your perfect hope, in your perfect kind of world and hope for Tales of Kinzera, what would you hope a player might come away with at the end? Like, you know, is there a kind of, is it a feeling of not being alone with this? You're not alone in grief. And
it's that, and also this sense of like, actually it's okay to not be okay. So right. I think that for the first, as I said, like 4 years, I was very much telling myself, all right, okay, I have to be the man now. I've got to be fine. It's going to be great. It's going to be, you know, everything's, it's what happens. It's life.
Yeah.
And I kind of was very much, you know, sort of like a horse with blinders in a way, just sort of being like, right, nope, I've got to just march on forward. And I didn't necessarily give myself time, or I didn't allow myself to emote or I didn't allow myself to actually be like, actually, you know what? I don't feel good today. I want to, you know, I don't feel 100%. I don't want to do this. I don't want to, like, I was just always just working, just moving forward, yeah. just yeah. fighting. Like, yeah. I think I felt like I was fighting all the time. And I think, like, the one thing that I want people to kind of come out with at this game is this feeling of like, actually, you know what? It's okay to not feel good.
Yeah.
You know, because I think a lot of the time we always have this thing, and I remember this was something that I used to tell myself all the time as well. It's like there's always someone out there who's having it worse than you, and it might be true, but at the same time, that yeah. shouldn't necessarily negate your own feelings and your own emotions.
Absolutely,
because otherwise, what's the point? Yeah. otherwise, you should. yeah. Otherwise, you okay? Cool. You should then don't complain. You know, yeah. but I think like yeah, you have the right to. You have a right to express, and I think that's what I, you know, what I'm hoping is translate. Obviously, having a great time with the game is going to be a very good thing.
Yeah. yeah.
But like, you know, but at the same time, it's that feeling of yeah, it's okay to not be okay, and you see that through the character's journey as a whole. I hope you do anyway.
Well, I've not played a huge amount of it yet, and obviously I don't know how the story wraps up at the end, but from mm-hmm. what I have played at the moment, you've got the main character, Zhao, voiced mm-hmm. by yourself.
Yeah. Which was, by the way, my team, I will kind of forgive and not forgive at the same time, because they really pushed me to... for a long time, the game wasn't going to be voiced.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
for a while. Yeah, wow.
The game wasn't going to be voiced. I was like, we're not voicing this game. It's like, it's just going to be, you know, text. People are going to read it. It's going to be fine. It's what it is. Then my team were like, but you're Bayek. I was like, I know,
fully
but I just...
someone.
Do you know what I mean? But there's a thing, there's that whole thing of like, I don't want to do this game and then voice it. And then someone turn around and be like, oh, so you're just making yourself work, huh?
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Right. Well, Bayek didn't go that well. Okay, cool. All right,
so, you know what I mean? So I was just like, oh, but then when they convinced me to do it and pull in the team that I did, it was lovely. Sorry.
But yeah, just the sense of him, he feels like he's quite a young, inexperienced, naive character, at least at the start of the game. But a lot of the gameplay so far, it's, you know, it's really vibrant and joyful. Yeah. And like, you know, the actual act of playing the game moment to moment, like the combat's really smooth and responsive right. and fast. The platforming sections, a couple of them have kicked my ass so far. but also when you get through them, there's like you know, I've just unlocked the ice power where I can freeze waterfalls and like I've been like wool hopping up a frozen waterfall and jumping at the last minute over spikes.
Yeah.
Getting to the end of one of those sections, you really feel like, oh yes, I've absolutely nailed that. Yeah. So the actual experience of playing the game, you know, feels very joyful. And yeah. I guess that was intentional.
Yeah, because again, you know, the biggest lesson I learned after my father passed away was the world continued to spin. Like nothing stopped, you know, in the sense of, and again, I know that sounds kind of crazy, but at this, you know, this big life event happens and everyone just goes on with their day. You know, like the thought that I remember thinking, here I am with my father who's passed and, you know, my mate on the other side of the world is having a coffee. What? Like it was very surreal. So, I remember feeling like the world almost just turned vivid, like these rose-tinted glasses were snatched from me and I could see the world for what it was, which was this, it was life, it was beautiful, it was a lot, it was an attack on the senses. And so that's what I wanted to capture. Even though Zhao's got his own journey and he's grieving, the world isn't grieving, you know, the world continues to spin. And I think like that was something that I really wanted to capture and really play with. And that sense of agency of the combat being smooth and the movement being really smooth was again this feeling of like you as the player have control. You can play it very, you know, staccato-y and very kind of surgical in a way, or you can be kind of rapidly and chaotic, because again, that's sort of resembling that journey of grief. It's the sense that you are kind of thrown into the deep end with everything and nothing at your arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's sort of what we wanted to really marry and capture there.
I really wanted to ask you a question about the game. I may be a little bit further on from Rob, but I think you've done something really interesting with the start of the game. And if this is a spoiler, then we won't talk about it. But
no, sure.
You know, it's although Zhao is the main character, Zhao is the character in a story.
Yes. Yep.
And hearing you talk about storytelling and your love of storytelling. and just the, you know, the emotion behind this game. I'm really interested in kind of if you could talk at all about about that.
Yeah, so it really, again, it was inspired by this this idea of communication and the way in which a lot of kind of Bantu cultures sort of run, and it's not necessarily all of them, but actually most of them, death isn't necessarily the end. There is a sense of like, it's almost like we find our way of communicating with our ancestors and spirits after they've passed. And, you know, moments then beforehand, almost kind of like, you know, that moment that you saw a film, for example, for the last time with your loved one, almost becomes even more of a moment after they've passed, because you'll never have it again.
Yeah.
And so this was something that I remember feeling and thinking, oh man, this is real for me. This is like this is something that I need to kind of express and talk about, this communication from after, from you know, from beyond.
Yeah.
There was a moment where I was clearing my father's stuff, and I've still got it. I've got this notepad that he'd written in, and it was his handwriting, and it was just his notepad for work. Like, it wasn't any sort of notes of feelings or whatever. It was literally just a notepad for work. But I remember looking at it, and it was like, this is even beyond a picture, beyond, you know, a video. It felt really personal, like I was almost like summoning him again, because I could imagine him sitting there and writing it, and I could, you know, feel his writing.
Yeah.
And I think like there was something really potent and powerful about that, because that was his past experience, but this is my experience now. And so the reason why we wanted to start the game within a different setting, within a different world, and it being, you know, a story within a story, is literally because it's his father trying to communicate with his son after he has passed.
Yeah.
And it's this tit for tat. And, you know, as the story kind of progresses and as you kind of go into it, you'll see that even more so. And it was just one of those ones where we just had to do it that way. Because, you know, Zuberi, who is the character that you play with at the beginning, his mentality is very much like, oh, you know, Bubba's gone. He's gone, he's gone. Whereas the father's is more like, you know, look, come on, we can go through this journey together, and you can learn something new.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I remember, you know, I always say this, my dad, this was before, you know, before he passed away, but he was still ill. And I remember him sitting down and telling me, listen, you know, when I'm dead, don't worry about me. You know, I'm just worm food. You know, just do your thing. I'll be there, but just don't worry about it. I'll be there. And I remember being like, that's a horrible thing to say. Like, why are you telling me this? But it was that sense of, again, trying to help me journey forward and move forward in a way that I look back at it now and I'm like, oh, okay. He was just trying to communicate essentially like, look, it's going to be rough, but it's going to be okay. And I think that's essentially what I wanted to start this journey with.
Yeah.
As a whole, as the game. So yeah,
I was going to say this like I'm important. I have my normal introduction, but
hey man, you're normal, but you're special in my eyes. I thought I was normal. You. So
for what it's worth, I found it an extremely like powerful kind of tool, because it sort of allowed me to suspend my disbelief somewhat, and like, because I was, you know, if you'd just gone straight into Zhao's story, you're in this fantastical world and, you know, there's magic and there's all these different characters and creatures and things. And there's not, I mean, almost every game is like that. And every kind of media is like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But by taking it out a step and going and setting it up and going, we're going to read a story and you know it's a story. It kind of allowed me to suspend my disbelief and just... And look out for the themes and things, you know, more.
Yeah.
It meant more to, I knew I was being told a story, which is silly because, again, all games and movies and things are telling you a story. But it was kind of like, it was like a mental sort of, I've entered a mental place where I was like, let's pay attention and see what is this story? What is it that his dad wants to tell him, wants to impart? Whereas I think if we just started with Zhao, I'm not sure I would have such a good sense, or I'd be on the lookout for
sure.
That, you know?
It's because it becomes a message in a way,
right?
A clearer message. And I think, you know, and this is the other thing as well that I really wanted to kind of push as well. It's like, you know, when although you are playing a Zhao, you are playing Zuberi Zhao.
Right.
Everything that you will notice, especially within the sort of that, you know, the modern day or the Afrofuture space, there are links to the actual game itself.
Like, there's a reason why the Mask of the Sun and the Mask of the Moon look exactly like the way that they do.
Right.
And there's a reason why, you know, even the bosses look like the way they do, or the world looks like the way it does. And it's because it's through Zuberi's eyes. In the same way that when you're reading a script or reading a book, you're imagining this world through your eyes, but you might read, you know, the same book, but imagine it very differently.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, that was something that I really wanted to kind of capture as well. It's like this feeling of like, okay, Zuberi's reading this book, but what happens if you give this same book to another character? What do they see?
Yeah.
And like, you know, and how do they feel? Because again, it's like grief. It's this universal thing that we all go through, but it almost affects us differently and makes us feel very kind of isolated, even though it's this, even though it's a journey we'll all go through. So that's something that we really, you know, that I really wanted to kind of hit with.
Yeah. I love it. I, like I said, I really thought that was super, I don't know, really effective. It's such a simple thing. Mm. It's just a very short part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, like two or three minutes, but it just set up the rest in a way that's really made me kind of look at it, you know, experience it completely differently.
Thank you.
It's very cool.
Yeah. It's again, like I look back at this whole process and I'm like, oh man, I remember deciding that and being like, this is what I want to do. And everyone was like, what? They're like, yeah, so you want to play in this random space for like a few minutes? I'm like, don't worry, it will make sense. Yeah. And then they do it and you're like, oh yeah, it makes sense. I'm like, exactly. Game dev. So yeah.
Well, we've got some questions from the Access community, Abu. But before we go on to that, and obviously, you know, you're not going to be able to reveal anything grand now, but I just wanted to ask you, have you got any more stories inside you that you want to tell?
Oh man, so many. I mean, again, like, it's really cool that, you know, normally with actors who go into then creating their own, you know, sort of production company or space, they go into making a film or like a, you know, like a TV show or even doing a play. I just love the fact that I've entered in with a game because, yeah, I mean, there is, and especially in today's time where you're seeing a lot of TV shows and films being made into, you know, from games or inspired from games. There's 101 stories that I really want to share and tell. And that's why I wanted to make Surgent Studios rather than write this game idea, give it to like another, you know, studio or publisher and kind of be gone with it. It was, you know, for me, it was very important to sort of make a space where, you know, there's a reason why it's called like Tales of Kanzera. It's a universe that has all these different shades and different kind of characters that you that want to, you know, that I've got a plan for.
I was going to say, it feels like a franchise title.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Tales of Kanzera.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's sort of the thing. And really, truly, it was created because, you know, I've been very fortunate to have worked in an industry where I've met some really cool people and made some really good friends who are also really good storytellers. And I'm like, do you want to tell a story in this world? And so it provides that opportunity to share and play with my best mates, essentially, and just be like, yeah, let's tell this story. But, you know, where's the human truth? Where's the heart in it? And then we build from there, you know? So yeah, it's definitely, there's all sorts cooking, man. Let's just hope this game does really well. And then we can talk about that.
That hurdle first.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I really hope it does because I've been really enjoying my time with it so far, Abu. I think it's an amazing achievement. So congratulations to you and the whole team who's been involved with its development. We have some questions from the community. A lot of these I think you've already touched upon. But I'll go through them anyway. Pink Hayes asks, and I already know the answer to the first bit of this one, were you aware of the Assassin's Creed franchise before voicing Bayek? And if so, which is your favorite Assassin's Creed game and why?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I was aware. I was a massive fan, huge fan. I ended up basically, you know, being like the law keeper when I started working on the job. Favorite stuff, man. I'd say it's between Black Flag and probably two.
Two, good, I mean, choices. Two's a good one.
It's, you know,
good,
two's choice. Good.
For me, I mean, they're both good choices.
Two's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Flag and two, I'd say.
The open ocean on Black Flag was, well, it's hard not to say game changer. I hate saying that about games. But, like, you know, it felt like a whole new world opened.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah, that's great.
The whole two trilogy I thought was cool. Like two followed by Brotherhood and then Revelations.
Yeah.
Just that whole Ezio story,
the
way it wrapped up as well. I think you get like, I don't know if I'm remembering it correctly, but you get like a scene where you discover the body of Altair.
Yeah, and then you have a scene with him.
So good.
It's absolutely amazing. Jacques Maracas asks,
oh, wow, what a name.
Oh, yeah.
What impact do you hope Tales of Kinsera-Zao will have on players? And I think Dave has already asked this question.
As I said, if you had anything else to add to it. Yeah, I just think, I think as on players, I do think, like, again, it's this sense of, and I know people know this, but I do really do see games as an art form. I do really see them as a form of expression. And when you allow developers to express and to play, it's really cool. It's really good fun. You get some really interesting stuff there. So I think, again, like, if, you know, if I was talking on the emotional side of, as I said, like, it's okay to not be okay, and you know, to kind of know that you're not alone on this journey of grief, I think on a practical level, like, it's just a sense of, like, hey, you know, let's support, you know, really cool indie projects and show them, like, show the people out there, essentially the ones who make these decisions, like, it's important to respect the art and listen to players.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, most games that really stick with you are ones that were a bit bold and daring and very different. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping as well with that will come out the end of this as well. It's like some form of, it not only invites new players into this medium, but it also shows, you know, those new players and new people as well that games are an art form.
I do think, you know, you've got to be leading the way there somewhat, because not only is this your studio's first game, but it's like you worked in video games, but in a very different capacity.
Completely
like to
different.
Have put together a studio and now be releasing a game, like, usually you would have expected, you know, that you to have been on the developer side somewhere else and gone
alone.
Yeah,
kind of, yeah.
And so I think that's really, you know, hopefully that also strikes a chord with people who are like, this could be my career.
Oh, totally.
I've got a really cool idea.
And I think, and that's also what's really great about it, right? And like, people should be inspired by it. It's the fact that, like, yeah, okay, fine. I've worked in the, you know, the acting space, and it's allowed me to kind of meet people within the game space. But I mean, the thing is, it's like the games community and the industry is so accessible now.
Yeah.
Like, anyone can do it. In the same way that anyone can make a film with an iPhone. Yeah. Like, it's so possible and it's so accessible. So yeah, if you've got a really cool idea, like, you know, find some people and make something and do something, like, because it and, you know, your journeys will always be different, but if it was supposed to happen, it will happen.
Yeah. You know? And I'm really guilty of not trying, you know, like deciding it won't work, so not even trying. And it's like, just try.
Yeah.
Just try, and then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's not a bad thing. It'll lead you somewhere. Yeah, it'll lead you somewhere else. Like, I've again, the game wasn't the first port of call of trying to figure out my grief and how to do it. Like, Tales of Kinsera obviously was the game and was the idea, but the idea, you know, I had many other ways or thoughts or feelings of how to kind of convey this feeling of this journey of grief, be it through, you know, a TV show or even through theater or even through like a film, but nothing, it didn't either it didn't work or it just didn't stick.
Yeah.
And it was only when it really made sense to me and then to everyone else that it had to be a game. That's when it came into fruition.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Crumpet asks.
I love these names, man.
Question from Crumpet. What is the process for working out how a character should talk, particularly for a game that is set in the past? So basically, this is
names.
How did you work out Bayek's ancient Egyptian accent? I guess is the question there.
I was wondering about this, yeah.
Okay, so... This is hilarious. So I remember when we were starting it and, you know, we were thinking, all right, ancient Egyptian, what does that sound like? And we were like, well, we can't do, like, you know, Arabic Egyptian, because this was like way back before then. So we've got to kind of find like a hybrid. And I remember the dialect coach at the time, bless him, he was kind of like, I have no idea. So, so we were like, okay, let's go for this. Like, you know, I'm just gonna talk like my family would talk to me, and they were like, this is working. Okay, this is interesting. And then we're like, okay, and let's add, you know, some, you know, sort of Arabic inflection and play with that. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, I'm kind of believing this. And I think that truly, as long as you say it with conviction, everything will be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's essentially how we came about it. Because no one has any recording or idea of how they kind of spoke like back in the day. You've only got to do it with conviction and go with it, you know? Yeah. So that's essentially how we decided on that front. Ancient Egyptian is very hard because most takes are either... I mean, there was a time where it was going to be in a British accent.
Oh, interesting.
It was going to be full on RP.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, you can't do that. Like, it would look so weird and just doesn't, it won't, it just feels very, very kind of, you know, a bit lazy. And yeah, really had to fight for having some form of accent there. And as soon as we kind of decided like, oh, it was this almost like Kenyan-esque sort of, you know, very light sort of African sort of language. It just made sense. And we were like, yeah, this is actually really cool. You know?
So interesting. I love hearing stuff like that. It's like when you hear like, you know, oh, do you know they were going to cast X instead of, you know, before it was Harrison Ford, it was whoever. It's like, oh my God, I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine X.
It was all going to be British
accent.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine it.
Honestly, it was very, it was
how
very
would you
weird.
Do that? Give us an example of a Bayek line in an RP accent.
What's his line? I think, Siwa will never know peace. Siwa will never know peace. Yes. No, it doesn't work, man. No, it doesn't work.
It's not going to work.
She's no near. No.
It reminds me of a story. I think it was Kit Harington talking about when they were first doing Game of Thrones season one.
Yeah.
And how they wanted all of the noble houses to have like really posh RP accents.
Right.
And they asked Sean Bean if he could do like an RP accent. And he was like, no. So they basically told all the other Stark actors, right, you're doing a Yorkshire accent. You're doing Northern accents.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I love that kind of thing. Okay, we've got a couple more questions. Lame Lycanthrope asks, is there anything about the creation process, either as a dev or as an actor, that you wish people were more aware of?
How hard it is.
Yeah,
right.
It's like, you know, I remember when we announced, everyone was like, they've just ripped off Prince of Persia. And I remember thinking to myself, we've been building this for 4 years.
Oh, God.
This has been our idea for 4 years. We didn't even know Prince of Persia existed. But I think just how much work is done to make it look easy. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I think that, especially as an actor, like, you know, a lot of actors, like, the trick is to honestly look like it just is just coming out for the first time ever, right? And that's hard because you've got to almost know the line, know the character, know the scene, and know everything so well that you're not pre-planning it, right? And it is, yeah, it's just knowing the difficulty of a creative process. But at the same time, you don't also, you know, the magic of that stuff is that you don't know how, you know, how the sausage is made, essentially. But yeah, I just remember everyone being like, especially when the game was out, I was like, oh, they've just, you know, they've just kind of made another Prince of Persia, but in Africa. And I'm like, oh man, if you knew, if you knew that when Prince of Persia was, I remember the feeling and all the devs feeling when you saw Prince of Persia being announced, it's that Leonardo DiCaprio meme of like him noticing something on the screen and being like, oh man, but it's great though. It's really cool. But yeah, it's just the process of it all.
I imagine it is infuriating.
Oh God, I can't imagine it. Yeah, yeah, I'm sympathizing with you massively.
Honestly, but to be honest though, the beauty of it as well is like, because the game is really good. Like, yeah. Prince of Persia is amazing, and what it does is though it invites
just
people
sitting there politely applauding. Yeah,
well done, guys. No, but it does it brings people who wouldn't have necessarily tried that genre or that type into it, and being like, I want more of this. Which is also what's really cool about the, you know, the games industry. Is like, people don't, they're not like, oh, I've had like now Metroidvania fatigue. They're like, no, I want another one.
Yeah,
like, they just want another one.
Yeah,
like,
this is my thing.
Like, I want another, like, you know, open world sort of RPG. Like, I want another Baldur's Gate 3. Like, I want another, you know, Hellblade. Like, give me something more.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's like, yeah, okay, this is actually good, because it also shows as well, like, here's a game made by, like, you know, Ubisoft, who are, you know, veterans in this, who can, you know, and the team, you know, who made Rayman Legends and all these really cool platformers. And then you've got a new studio who's made, you know, a 30 people studio who's made the game kind of same, but different, you know. And it's like, but that's the beauty of art. It's yes. like, it's different. It might feel, it might look the same, but it's actually very different. And it's like, that's what I love about it, you know? Like, you wouldn't necessarily say like Hollow Knight is the same as like Ori or Dead Cells.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, they're very different. And that's what I love about it as well.
Awesome. One final question from Fire Breathing Dapper Boy.
Oh, God.
Alex is just making these up. Fire Breathing Dapper Boy asks, if you could voice a character in any video game, who would it be and why? And this could be like a game that already exists in the past.
Oh, man.
Who would be your dream character to voice?
Kane. From the Legacy of Kane.
Oh, the Legacy of Kane. Oh, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a massive Soul Reaver fan. I am still a Soul Reaver fan. Yeah. Give me Legacy. Give me Kane. Give me Kane.
He's got quite a posh accent, though.
He does. He does. And, you know, I don't know why, but I've always got a soft spot for vampires. I don't know what it is.
we've all got a soft spot for vampires. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right? But, like, there's something about Kane which is really... I don't know, he's just got a very interesting and cool history and a cool backstory to how he kind of got to where he is and why he is who he is. And to play that,
yeah,
that'd be really, really dope.
I love him as a character. The first time I ever saw him as a character was the intro to Soul Reaver.
Yes.
Where he's actually the villain.
Well, he's, yeah.
And that game opens by him casting Raziel into the Lake of the Dead.
Yeah.
And you see this character, he looks... you know, incredibly imposing and evil. Mm. And he has that amazing line, which is just like, cast him into the fire.
Yeah.
And he delivers it in this really incredible voice. So good. Yeah. That's a great choice. Yeah, I wasn't expecting
definitely.
To say
no,
that. That's very cool. But anyway, Abu, that question leads us very neatly into a fun little sign-off section.
Can't wait for this.
Dave, you've got to have your best video game brain on here.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, you've chosen the wrong person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. We're ready for this.
What we've got, we've put together, we have got 8 iconic,
don't say iconic,
lines of video game dialogue from various characters.
No. What are you doing to me?
Which I'm hoping Abu is going to deliver in his very best Bayek voice. Dave, you've got to work out what character and what game the line is from.
Oh, this is going to be horribly embarrassing for me, Abu. I'm sorry.
This is going to be so great.
I believe in you, Dave.
I can't wait. So I have to do it in my Bayek voice. Okay.
Please, yeah. Otherwise, I think if you do an impression of it, I think you'll do it too well. And it'll be too easy for Dave.
Okay, cool. Oh, God, Bayek is... Let's see if
you've
I can bring
Bayek.
Bring
dredge him
this
up.
It's going to be like a mixture of Bayek and Zhao, so I'm so sorry.
We can do it in the Zhao voice. Yeah, maybe that would work better.
I've struggled a long time with surviving, but no matter what, you have to find something to fight for.
I think it's Joel from The Last of Us.
Yes! Oh, wow!
He's got it.
Yes!
Oh, my
Come
God.
On. Okay,
wow.
Okay. So I needed one. I needed
you've done
one.
It now. Damn. You've saved yourself. It doesn't matter if you get them all wrong.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
You've got one right.
We do not hide. We prepare for a fight for which we are not yet ready.
We do not hide. We prepare for a fight. That's very... It's very cool having you sat here doing this, by the way. I'm more half just enjoying it and then going like, oh, but pay attention. Can I get it one more time?
Yeah, sure. We do not hide. We prepare for a fight for which we are not yet ready.
We prepare for a fight for which we are not yet ready. We do not hide. Oh, it sounds so cool.
You have finished this game, Dave.
Oh, don't say that. I'm getting nothing. I've got to be honest. It sounds...
Let me try something different then.
Okay.
We do not hide. We prepare for a fight for which we are not yet ready.
Ah.
Now he knows it. That was amazing, by the
way. Thank you very much.
Was that a certain God of War?
There it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
fun.
So good.
That was fun. Okay. Real greatness is what you do with the hand you are dealt.
These are all great lines.
These are great lines.
So good. I'm not 100%.
Have a
go. Real greatness is what you do with the hand you're dealt. I just can't shake Nathan Drake. Is it Nathan Drake?
Oh, you're close.
Very close.
Oh, if not Nathan Drake, is it Sully?
It is.
Yeah, it is Sully.
Yes.
Do you know what game specifically?
Honestly, no, but okay. I would guess Uncharted 3.
He's
oh
got it.
Oh, God.
Wow.
I'm amazed.
Dave's on fire today.
Oh, my God. Thank God. I'm so happy.
Wow.
I would like to hear your Sully, though. Do you do a Sully?
I don't actually. I've completely forgotten how it sounds like. Oh, wow. Okay, that's amazing. Okay. Oh, I like this one. You betrayed your own blood and surrendered your son to his fate.
Ooh. What a terrible thing to have done.
This is going to be a hard one for you, Dave, because I don't know if you have played this game.
I can't think. All I can think of is Tekken.
I mean, it is basically the tagline of Tekken right there.
I don't think I can get that one.
Okay.
Is there a Clue version?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to try a Clue version. The thing is, I've played this like 2 or 3 times, but I can't mimic it because it's so good. Anyway,
yeah.
Let me try it. You betrayed your own... No, you betrayed your own blood and surrendered your son to his fate. That was my terrible...
That's great. He's going to love that.
I know he is. Oh, God.
You betrayed your own blood and surrendered his son. Oh, well, I know who it is now.
Oh, yeah.
Was that Mr. Star?
It is.
Was that Clive?
Yes, it is.
Clive.
That was terrible. Oh, please don't hate me, Ben. I do love you, man. I do love you.
You've okay. nailed him. You oh, nailed him, Ben. That was great.
You take a punch really well. Good job.
You take a punch really well. I just thinking I would never want to hear that line. Just, oh. I'm going to need the Clue version if there
oh,
is one.
Oh, God, okay. I don't even know if I could even... this is going to be
terrible.
This
is a difficult one for
this
both
is
of
hard.
You.
Yeah,
yeah,
this
okay.
is oh, God. Again, I'm so... I'll say his name afterwards, but I'm just saying sorry to you now before I... You take a punch really well. Good job.
That okay. was pretty good.
That was terrible.
Is it Marvel Spider-Man?
Yeah. Oh my God! Oh wow! I'm gonna put that down to my performance. So thank you.
It was your performance.
Yuri.
I couldn't have done it without the Clue version. Yeah.
Oh God. Okay.
You'll definitely get this next one, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, don't give me
one.
That sort of pressure.
It's a nice easy one.
I'll make it harder with the Bayek voice. Don't worry. I used to be an adventurer like you. Until I took an arrow to the knee. That was terrible. I think you got that one easy.
I know this. I used to be an adventurer like you until I took an arrow to the knee.
Come on, Dave.
Come on, man.
Everyone
this
knows
like,
this.
This is like a meme.
Is this a Skyrim?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You did know it, but you were doubting yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Two more to go.
You ready?
Okay.
Sleep. I never sleep, I just wait in the shadows. And I'll kill you all, everyone who sniffed the air that day in Siba.
Oh, well, that was an excellent read, by
Thank
the way.
You.
I
Thank
particularly
you.
Enjoyed that. Sleep. I never sleep, I just wait in the shadows.
It's almost like a trick question, this one, Dave.
Yeah.
Is it? It's not.
What?
That's why it was so good. I feel like Rob's giving me a hint there. Was that by
it? It was by it, yeah.
Yes.
Normally more vicious, but I was like, how do I throw this
straight
guy off?
Like casual ones, like yeah, and by it for a dinner date.
I'll kill you all. Everyone has sniffed the air that day. So well.
You're both doing amazingly
this
well.
This is fantastic.
There's
Thank
one
you.
More to go.
Right. What's it going to be? Loyalty to me? Loyalty to your mission.
Oh, another great line.
You have played this game as well, Dave.
Loyalty to me and loyalty to your mission. I can't think. I'm not sure, but I want it to be. Diana from Hitman.
You're sort of in the right genre.
Yeah, the right sort of genre. I mean, I can't give you a trick. I can't give you a hint version because I actually
version.
Can't remember. Again, it's been a while, but I mean, I'll try it in a different accent. What's it going to be? Loyalty to me or loyalty to your mission? Or what's it going to be?
Loyalty to me, or loyalty to your mission? You know, here's another hint. I've acted with the guy who I've mentioned today.
Yeah.
And he played one of the characters in this franchise.
That is an amazing hint.
Okay. So I'm thinking Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
Five.
No, but that's the game that was the game he was in. But right, it's,
that was the hint.
Mm.
Okay. So loyalty to me, loyalty to your mission. I've played this Metal Gear Solid.
Under scrutiny.
Under scrutiny.
Yeah.
Is it the one?
No.
Three.
Yes.
Yes.
Is it Major? Who is it?
It's the boss.
It's the boss.
It's the boss. There's that amazing line right at the end.
Right.
Which is like loyalty to me, right, loyalty to your mission.
Literally when you're about to finish her off. Oh no, before you have the battle.
Very I think it cool. might be before that. Which is basically asking Snake, you know, you gotta kill me.
Yeah.
Damn.
Is it gonna be loyalty to me or loyalty to the mission?
Those are great lines, by the way.
Yeah, they're
phenomenal. I can't take credit even obviously not for writing them, but not even for pulling them together for this podcast.
That was great. That was really, really cool.
Honestly, Abby, that was very cool for me. Thank you so much.
No worries.
I don't often get to have famous video game lines read to me by a professional. Yeah. So thank you so much.
And Abby Bakker cool. Slim's Ben Stein.
I know, I'm so sorry, Ben.
Taken out, made into a YouTube short and put up on the channel for everyone.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Ben. Oh, Jesus.
I couldn't. I didn't hear any difference. So I thought he was. To be honest, I thought he was here.
Oh God!
Amazing. Well, Abu, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the PlayStation Access
Thank
podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Congratulations on Tales of Kanzera's Owl.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see what everyone makes of the game and to see whatever else you've got cooking up in the future. Like, it's a really exciting thing I think you're building with Surgeon Studios.
Amazing, thank you.
And yeah, good luck on all of the, you know, the House of the Dragon stuff.
Oh boy. Oh, yeah, and that's happening.
What a time. What a time.
God.
So yes, if you're interested in Tales of Kanzera's Owl, it is out on PS5 on the 23rd of April. If you are a PlayStation Plus extra or premium member, it is also part of the game catalogue at release. So don't miss it. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching and for listening. Stay tuned to the YouTube channel as we'll have loads more coming up. Hopefully on Tales of Kanzera's Owl very soon. Otherwise, have a great rest of your day and we'll see you again very soon. Goodbye.